With your indulgence, I'm going to deviate from my normal introduction to an interview with a photographer. I owe Marty Knapp a thank you because he's done something for me that it's taken 40-some-odd years in photography to accomplish. Marty Knapp got me to enjoy infrared photography. Few photographers have accomplished that. Let me just cut right into our interview so you can hear what I mean. I've never been a fan of infrared photography. It always appears to me as though the project is about infrared photography. And when a photography project is about photography, I always tend to find it a little boring. On the other hand, what you've done that inspires me and motivates me is that you have made a project that photographs using infrared, but that's not what the project is about. The project is about these wonderful, wonderful oak trees, and the infrared just makes them more interesting. And but I don't have that overwhelming feeling that you want me to go, ooh, ah, infrared. You want me to go, ooh, ah, oak trees. And that works.
Well, absolutely, Brooks. It is the trees that drew my attention, but I know that infrared can be loud as we're talking about it, diverting attention away from the subject to the process. However, since a good friend of mine showed me how to photograph trees in particular in infrared, I was stunned and started feeling drawn to the trees, and pretty much that's all I've photographed with infrared, almost 95% of it.
Well, you know, other than a few obvious clues, like, you know, stark white leaves, I wouldn't necessarily even know that these are infrared, because the compositional approach, the lighting approach, everything about them is all about the oaks. Unfortunately, you are surrounded with these wonderful oaks down where you live in the Bay Area, north of the Bay Area a bit, and I can imagine you have no lack of subject material.
Well, there's definitely an opportunity to get these trees, and I see them every day as I'm driving around. They look different in the spring than they do in the winter up here. And in fact, some people, when they see these photographs at first, think that they're looking at California more or less in August or September, when the green grasses turn straw-colored. Or they think they're seeing frost on the ground. So it's sort of interesting. But yeah, the oaks are everywhere here, and they're gorgeous, and they go into Central California, as you probably have seen yourself, Brooks.
Yeah. Now, did you do something specifically with the infrared process to tone it down a little bit so they don't scream infrared like so much of that work does?
Well, I'm not sure. You know, I use Lightroom to change all of my photographs. First of all, it's from a camera. Almost all of them are from a camera that's been converted. It's had the sensor converted to infrared capture. But that being said, what you would see is sort of a monotone reddish-colored image. But using Lightroom, I convert it to grayscale, and then I basically just move my black and white point and play with the curves a little bit. I don't know that I'm toning it down. In fact, sometimes I think it's a little bit obvious. It's a little bit loud in its infrared quality.
Well, that is the danger in any photographic technique, not just infrared. You're an old Ansel Adams guy fan, so am I, and I remember distinctly when he wrote in his books that, you know, if you dodge or burn a print in the darkroom and you can see that you dodged or burned it in the darkroom, you did it wrong. It's too much. All such techniques are intended to be influencing the final result, but not obvious. And that's always been the problem with infrared. But again, I'm not sure what you did to make that not be the case here. And so I was hoping you'd say, oh, I did this technique so that I could go copy you.
Yeah, well, you're welcome. You and your listeners are welcome to copy me all you want, and I'm happy to share. I don't have any big secrets about what I've done here. The only thing is, I was looking for subject matter in which the bones, what I call the limbs, I call them the bones of the tree, are in stark contrast to the background, the leafing out in the spring and the green grass, and using that as the the best lighting situation, I'm choosing to accentuate and to use that. But outside of that, it's pretty much the way I feel about black and white photography, only amped up a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And by the way, Brooks, there is a danger, or for me anyway, of falling into what I call the rabbit hole, because it's so much fun to make some of these photographs that pretty soon I find myself only shooting a particular scene in infrared with my infrared camera and forgetting that I have a full sensor or a raw color version of another camera body that I could be pulling up and discovering to my chagrin later that I should have photographed in full color because infrared was not called for and I missed my shot and I'm now 1,000 miles away.
Oh boy, all of us have fallen into that rabbit hole. I know exactly what you're talking about. You get hooked by some new technique or something that you've learned, and suddenly the whole world looks at, you know, it's the old business about when your only tool's a hammer, the whole world looks like a nail. Well, we've all been there, every one of us. I know how that works.
Well, let me throw this in, too. Because of this, and originally as I started with two camera bodies, one was totally dedicated to infrared, much like the infrared film we would shoot with a Hoya 72, and the other I left at raw color. They both were mirrorless cameras, Panasonics. When I converted my Sony, I thought about full spectrum. And then I controlled everything with glass on the front of the lenses. So I have what used to be in front of the lens, sort of a hot filter, a greenish colored filter, that'll put my camera back to raw color, which I used to convert to black and white. And then the Hoya 72 gives me that beautiful sort of mid-range or high mid-range infrared spectrum look. So now when I come to a place where I think, I wonder, I might make an infrared photo, but to cover it, I will make the other sometimes too.
Well, isn't it great having that kind of flexibility so that when you get back home and you're looking at things in Lightroom or post-processing where you have time, you can live with them, you can think about them. Isn't it wonderful that we have such flexibility in the field without having to shoot, you know, the entire roll of infrared, as it were?
Well, that's changed my whole creative process. The ability to take these images onto the computer, to look at them in Lightroom or Photoshop, whatever you're doing, and then to really ponder what you have, and often in a very short period of time after you've made the image. We couldn't do that in the film days. In fact, we'd run out of juice, you know, thinking, well, I got to get around and do another experiment and do another test, and then somehow we don't get back to it and we just let it go. Now we learn so fast.
Yeah, that's definitely the case. I'm assuming that you've used these techniques with other subject material beyond the oaks.
I have, but I'm primarily outdoors. I haven't tried to do any. I think I've done one farmhouse, one ramshackle farmhouse on the North County, and that wood and the grasses around it look interesting. It looks a little different. You can tell it's infrared, but basically I've stuck with the trees so far.
Yeah. You're primarily a black and white photographer, too.
More than primarily. I'm fond of saying I haven't printed a drop of color, which sometimes I wonder, because some of my macro work with flowers and so forth may demand bringing them back to the raw color they were captured in. But right now, I have been sticking with the black and white as an exclusive in my gallery.
Well, since you mentioned your gallery, let's talk about that just for a little bit. First, I suppose you should tell people where your gallery is so that they can swing by and take a look, because it's well worth the drive to go there for all kinds of reasons.
Well, you know, the gallery's in Point Reyes Station, which borders on the Point Reyes National Seashore. It's right on Highway 1 downtown in the town where I live. And downtown here is 2 or 3 blocks long, with a bakery, a hardware store, a few shops, and a couple restaurants. So my gallery's open on Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays, and sometimes when there's a lot of people around, my wife or I will open it up a little more. But we do have a life to live and making these pictures and taking care of our dogs and doing various things. But mostly we're open every weekend here on Highway 1.
You realize how many Listeners, you've just made it unbelievably jealous. You live in a gorgeous place where you can photograph literally in your backyard.
Yeah.
You've got a wonderful venue for your photography and people who not only love it, but buy it and provide you with a living. You're living many, many photographers' dream.
You know, I realized that, Brooks. One thing was that I've always loved photography, and when I moved to Point Reyes, I was struggling to find out how could I support myself doing what I love. And I started with portraits, but someone else was already doing them and well-established in the town, so there were only a few crumbs to pick up. Then I photographed paintings for artists, and finally it dawned on me, a lot of people that come to visit Point Reyes, they hold it as a treasured place in their hearts. When they go away, some subscribe to the newspaper and so forth. And I thought, well, I love Point Reyes, and I love photographing, and I love the landscape and the nature. Why don't I just make this my little nest and specialize? So fortunately, it's worked out at least enough to support my wife and I at a modest living here.
And you mentioned in your introductory information that you sent to us that one of these infrared oak tree photographs has turned out to be a very popular one in your gallery. I was curious to ask you, do people looking at that image and purchasing it, are they even aware that it's infrared, or is it just that they love the image?
A lot of people just love the image, but I would say at least half the people are getting educated now, and those that love photography, and they recognize the signature. Some people will say, this is terrific, but what am I seeing? I'll often hear those words, what am I seeing here? And I'll go, it's infrared. And they go, most people know what that is, but they think it's something like the military uses to photograph a heat signature of soldiers out in the field and so forth, which it's not at all. That's a myth. And it's not from photosynthesis. I would say half of the people know what they're looking at, and the others want to be informed, but it doesn't take away from their joy of the image.
Well, and I'm assuming that you get a different response when a photographer wanders into your gallery.
They're more educated, of course. The biggest question I get, whether these photographs in infrared or others in there, is sometimes a photographer will come in and they'll scan the room quickly. It's a very small room, and they'll say, digital or analog? And they won't even look at me when they say it. And I'll go, all of the above and more, because...
Right.
I have 30 years of developing film in my darkroom here, and many of the images they're looking at are expressed with pigment on paper, but they're scans from the original film, and then others come from the camera. So I live in the combined world of film and digital. Everything printed is digital.
You know, I have to say, I used to be bothered when a photographer would ask me such questions because I was concerned that maybe they were, they wanted to go out and copy my image. And rather than buy my image or whatever the case may be, they just wanted to go make their own. And it used to bother me a bit. And then I thought, no, wait a minute. That's a compliment. They like what you've done so much that they're a fellow photographer and they want to go do something similar because you've inspired them. And that's ultimately a good thing.
It is. There's different levels of that, and I think about this a lot. Sometimes people will come into the gallery, and they'll look at a particular image and very quickly decide that they're going to, quote, go out and get one just like that for you, honey. They'll tell their girlfriend, oh, I can get that, That's one level of not really seeing. And then others, like you say, are inspired to go out and do their own version or something, or you've triggered them to think about things in a new way. And that's really the best, because after all, nothing is really original.
Well, in my experience is that even when I do go out photographing with a photographer, we end up with different images. As a matter of fact, I have a friend I've been photographing with for years. We've even tried, literally, put our tripods in each other's tripod holes. We still end up with different pictures.
Of course, of course. And it's Heraclitus says that you can't go through the same river twice. You can't enter it. The river's there, but the water is different. It's different water. The air is different. It's different air. You're different. And so I feel the same way about photographs. this came home to me when a friend of mine took me up to Joshua Tree, and we walked on a long trail looking for sites, and I stopped in front of a beautiful pyramid-shaped rock that was standing there, and it was lit just right. You know, a lot of things we photograph are because the light is right, the season is right, it's that right moment. Mm-hmm. And so I made the photograph of it. He didn't say anything to me. Later on, and this was about the 100th birthday of Ansel Adams, a thing came in the mail announcing an exhibit that was going on, or his book. And there's that same damn rock, photographed almost from the same place. And I started laughing because I had never seen his image of it before. But but I realized that sometimes we walk in front of something and it's like a no-brainer. It's you know, it's calling to you, and right. If the same thing calls to two different people, they're not copying each other.
Well, you know, that does set up an interesting discussion, because there have been many times when I've wondered if the great photographers who have made these great images haven't just happened to have been the first people that went there, and they made all the obvious ones. Now, you and I go back, and we make all the obvious ones, and we're now copying, but they weren't copying because they were first.
Sure.
But it's okay. It's okay, because what that does is that sets up in you and I a challenge to say, okay, I did these. Now, can you do something that's even more personal, or that's yours, or that's better, if there's better in artwork? But for example, if I came down to your neck of the woods and started wandering around with a camera and an infrared sensor, trying to photograph your oak trees, I would feel the challenge to extend what I'm doing either more to my own personal vision, or to try to do something that at least measures up to the high bar that you've set. And I think that's good.
It's so true. You know, when I go out with another photographer, sometimes I coach them. I'll bring a photographer to a potentially good scene of light and objects that they can move around. And I think the biggest error that a photographer can make is sort of go up and say, okay, I took the picture, and then move on. Because if you walk closer, or you get down on your knees, or you climb on a rock, or come back later that afternoon, sometimes you can do so much better. You can circumnavigate the thing that's drawing your attention, because there's something there. And like you say, if you were to come in my territory and you'd seen certain rocks or the coast, and you go, oh, damn, that's what Marty did. Well, you would want to go and try to look at it from a different angle. You know it was there, and there's probably a lot more that I never saw. And when you did it, you would teach me, and that's how it works. When I bring someone out, I get amazed. They start doing things, and I go, gosh, I've got to come back here alone sometime. They just showed me something I never thought about. And that's what I love about looking and seeing.
I remember when I was a young photographer, I set for myself the objective of driving every single dirt road in the state of Oregon and photographing it. And so I was driving down dirt roads and photographing what I found there. And I was motivated, based on the definition of the project, to not drive down the same dirt road twice, because I'd already been there, see, and I have to go to someplace I haven't been before. Well, eventually, you just have to repeat a little something, even just to get to the next dirt road. And I started realizing that every time I drove down a dirt road, I saw different things, because the light was different, the season was different, and immediately the folly of my entire project became obvious. As you say, Heraclitus said you can't step in the same river twice. It's always different. And that clearly is one of the reasons to go back and back and back. You have the advantage that in the neighborhood in which you live, literally backyard, down the street, etc., you happen to be in one of the most spectacular scenic landscapes to photograph. And I would imagine that's a huge advantage to you, that you live there and can photograph every day.
So what's interesting to me now, Brooks, I started out photographing the landscape at Point Reyes, and I definitely have that advantage, and it's pretty much what I'm known for, and it's what, shall we say, puts bread on the table and people come to look at, and it is a gorgeous, gorgeous place. I don't want to belittle that, but like anything, I need to get out of Dodge, get out of town, and go to different places. So as beautiful as it is here, when I go to Joshua Tree or Death Valley or one of these other places, it kind of re-inspires me. Or if I take a piece of glass or some liquid and put it on my table in my studio and shine a light through it or a prism and start looking at patterns, all of a sudden I could be anywhere in the world. So I kind of have it both ways. I can wander out into this landscape, or I can just look closely no matter where I am. And that second part that I'm talking about now is where I'm increasingly being drawn to, into a more abstract, a closer look at things, less of the wide view.
You know, we should probably talk about your book. I'm assuming that your book is still available?
The book is barely available. I self-published the book in 2007. I got an award, a bronze medal, from the International Independent Publishers. I think that's the name of it, where you submit books. Got that in design, which I didn't design. But anyway, to make a long story short, there were about 2,700 of them published, 300 limited and 24 standard hardbound versions. And right now, if I look in the other room, I can find a couple of boxes, and I think I have 30 or 40 of each of those left, and that's it. And I'm probably not going to publish it again. So as far as promoting it, I haven't raised the price yet, but we're at the point where probably in the next year or so it'll sell out, only available on my website or my gallery right now.
Well, listeners, there you've been warned. If you want Marty's terrific book, which, by the way, is a lot more than just infrareds of oak trees. We're just seeing a tiny subset of what Marty has done. It's a terrific book. I'm fortunate that I have a copy, and it's a valued member of my personal library. It's terrific. I do pull it off the shelf from time to time, and every time I do, I'm inspired with it. So,
well,
Marty,
it's
just terrific to finally have you here published in Lenswork, and I look forward to more of your work and the ability to share it with Lenswork readers. Thank you so much.
Well, Brooks, thank you. I'm honored, and I'm very excited to get the good news that I'm going to be in your extended version, and I appreciate everything that you do. So thanks for inviting me in.
Copyright 2016, Lenswork Publishing.